Hello and welcome to the first English edition of Kick-Ass Radio, the Kick-Ass Sports podcast. And this edition is called Kick-Ass Sports Ground, Conversations for All and None, which is a series which is known in Germany. And for me, it's interesting to have my first English-speaking guest. And for both of us, we are not talking in our mother tongue. And I'm happy to say welcome, Kasper, to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Philip. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm really happy that you invited me on for the first English edition.
Yes, and I think this is in the DNA of our sport that we met people from abroad, and to connect via the internet is something super nice. And I think we share a lot of the sport. And I want to start where we met the first time. Can you remember how we met? During a very kind of difficult time.
Yeah, that was back in the COVID days. It seems a bit like yesterday, but then also thinking about what has happened the last 6 years is quite crazy to think of. But yeah, it was quite interesting, our first meeting, when that was kind of my first time on the pro series, you can say, with the PTO championship in Daytona. We had like two kind of interesting meetings where, you can maybe talk about the first one.
Yeah, I think it was in the pool in Daytona, and I think we went to the shower rooms, and Sevi said hello in a very interesting way to Magnus. Do you still know his words?
Yeah, and we still bully Magnus with it a bit, actually. So I think that came after Magnus's great win in 70.3 Poland. It was one of the first races post-COVID, or after that races were allowed. And Magnus won with like, I think, 9 or 10 minutes to Patrick Lange, which obviously people hadn't knew of Magnus at that time. And all of a sudden, there is like a tall Danish guy destroying everyone on the bike. So it kind of became a thing, I think, that people thought that Magnus had like a big draft of a car or something, because it can't be true that a tall Danish guy out of nowhere can bike 10 minutes from the rest of the field. So I think Sibby said to Magnus that, like, oh, do you, like, at first it was quite interesting because he came over to us, and obviously we, as I said, this was the first time we were out with the big boys, so to say. As Sibby came over and kind of introduced himself, and I remember we were really like, wow, oh, Sibby is coming over to say hello to us. And we got really like, quite surprised in a positive way. And we had a conversation for the first 2 or 3 minutes, talked a little bit, and then we could kind of sense that the conversation were taking like a turn in a different direction from being quite positive to negative, because like Sibby was talking about that his nickname out in town was, I think, Draft Detlef, because he was drafting on the car. That like it really hit Magnus, actually. And I think Sibby and Magnus has talked about it since, because obviously Magnus and I is huge fans of Sibby. And when he kind of said that his first victory was based off drafting a big car in the front, it actually hit him quite hard.
Yeah, and for me as a coach, it was a super tricky situation, because it was kind of like Sibby was pulling the elbows to the outside as one of the leading guys during that time. And it was really interesting. And then this weekend turned the other way around, because we both were spectators during the race, and there was this blonde guy from Denmark, and I couldn't see you, but I could hear you, because you were screaming at Magnus in a way I've never seen it before, or I've never heard it before, during the race. And this was super impressive. And again, Magnus has shown to everyone what he is capable on the bike. And so I think it was a, like, Magnus gave the answer to Sevi's comment in a very smart way during racing.
Yeah, I think he wrote on some anger to really show Sippy that maybe this was not just due to drafting. And I can't remember if I think maybe Magnus did overtake Sippy before he eventually pulled out of the race. And I think he like looked at him, didn't say anything, but just looked him deeply in the eyes and were like, this was not drafting.
Yeah, and in the end, Sebi is someone who's always respecting strong opponents, so that's not the part of it. But I think that's a funny way of stepping into a relationship or like meeting people. But I think from this time on, Magnus was one of the strongest guys on the mid distance all of a sudden, and he set a new level on the bike circuit. And you are part of this story, so I'm interested in how did you come to triathlon, and how do you ended up with Magnus in Daytona? This is the story I don't know.
Yeah, it is quite an, I think maybe an interesting story or different story. Originally, I actually come from motor racing, so I grew up. Basically, from I was 2 or 3 years old, I was really interested in cars, and especially when there was Formula One on the television. Back then, also for the German listeners, that was also the time of Michael Schumacher. Was a huge fan, and ever since I saw that on the television, I dreamt of being a Formula One driver. So when I was 5 years old, I think I got to a height where I could finally like. Have long enough legs to actually hit the throttle and the brake. So I started go-karting. And I did that actually for, I think, 10 or 11 years. And like was really invested in it also together with my family. But you can say, unfortunately, the sport is not only based upon talent and how much you want it. It's also really much based upon sponsorships and how much you can invest in it. And even though I have been really fortunate to have parents that has been really, really supportive, then obviously if a team comes and say, like, you're really talented, but if you can come with like 2 or 3 million euros, then we cannot take you in. And obviously that's not just something everyone can do. We tried our very best, but when I could see and my family could see that most likely would not be an option for us to take it further than where we got to, that then I didn't really wanted to pursue it. I've always been, since I was really young, been curious or you could say passionate about elite sports or wanting to be a professional athlete. And at first that started with go-karting and being a race driver. But that ended when I was then 15, 16 years old, when I wasn't motivated to just drive for the fun of it. I'd still drive go-kart now and then with Magnus, actually, and Jens. And I come out as the winner, fortunately, still. But then I had like 1 or 2 years where I think I maybe tried to find myself a little bit because my identity was quite much in racing. And at that time, I had started in high school. And for some reason, I found like a YouTube video. I think this was some of the NBC broadcast, the show they do after Ironman Hawaii. And I just got really fascinated about like the Big Island and the images of Crowley and Chris McCormack like battling it out. And I was just like, oh, I want to do this sport. And I think 2 weeks after I saw that YouTube video, that was the first year when we had, back then it was Challenge Copenhagen, and later on it's been Ironman Copenhagen, but they actually, the bike course was just straight in front of my house. So 2 weeks after, then all of a sudden the biggest long distance event in Denmark was outside of my house. And I felt like that was kind of a sign that, okay, now I want to like try and be a triathlete. So I found the local triathlon club nearby and signed up for that club, and yeah, got really passionate about triathlon. I didn't have any swimming background. I did rode my bike and ran quite often, just trying to keep myself in shape for karting and driving race cars. So that was quite natural to me. But obviously the swimming is a different game. Even when you're 15 years old and trying to come in, it's still difficult to learn. So yeah, then I actually tried to pursue a professional career within triathlon for maybe 3 or 4 years. Obviously, I didn't race as a professional, but it was always my ambition to, at some point, try to take it to the next level. But then I think 3 years into my own, you can say, career or pursue of creating a career, I got asked if I could be a coach for the local triathlon club where I was training at, because the coach at the time, he was about to leave and they needed a new one. And for some reason, they asked me. I didn't have any like coaching background or sports scientist background or anything. At this time, I was only 18 years of age. And I think it was maybe I've always been quite, you can say, good at being social and talking to people, and especially the younger ones. So I think maybe they felt that it was quite natural that I couldn't kind of take over, as I had a good relationship to everyone at the team. And yeah, then I took the job just as a side job to my high school. And to be honest, from then, that is now, yeah, 10 or 11 years ago, coaching has actually just been a big passion of mine. I pretty quickly found out that I had maybe more interest or passion for the coaching side of it. Obviously, I did love to do triathlon myself and keep myself active, but I could feel that I got way more excited, or like got my emotion invested in it, when my athletes were racing instead of myself. And I do remember I was racing an age group race back in, I think that was 2018 or 2019, where I had another athlete racing as well. And the only thing I could think about was how well my athlete did it. Like, and whenever I saw him out on the race course, I was stopping and said, like, have you fueled enough? Like, are you keeping up with the pacing strategy and all these kind of things? And I think at that time it really hit me that, okay, coaching is what I should do. And yeah, ever since then, I kind of took, you can say, my coaching, or tried at least to take it to a new level. At that time in Denmark, we didn't really have any like talent center or talent development. Obviously, we had a federation and they tried to be very supportive with those athletes we had, but we really didn't have any kind of squad or facilities to kind of enhance performance development or talent development. So I really just tried to get all the knowledge I could from YouTube and reading up on studies, hearing podcasts, to just kind of figure out how do I coach? How do I coach especially younger people? I also went on some courses from the federation to get more experience within communication and coaching in general, and also the more, you can say, scientific side of the sport as well. And then I just tried to build up my own talent development or department, you can say. And at one time, I think over 50% of the national team was junior national team was athletes based off my squad. And that is something, even though like it's not because we had, you know, a huge national team as the same way as the Germans has, but that was just kind of, I think, still one of the things I'm the most proud of, is that I kind of build it up a squad environment and a place for the younger athletes, where one thing was obviously that they were performing really well, but I also felt that we just had a really good atmosphere and like social life around the training, and everyone came to training, was happy. And it's like now looking back, I really appreciate those moments I had with the junior athletes, and they have really, even though they might not think about it, they have really helped me develop to the coach I am today. And with that being said, like maybe just to summarize it a bit, I think in the beginning of my coaching career, and especially when I started later on, and we'll get into that later on, but when I started working with professional athletes, I really, like, I had some self-doubt in the fact that I didn't came from, you know, I didn't have a master's degree or PhD in sports scientist. And I really felt that that was kind of a, not a mistake, but, you know, like a limiting factor.
Yeah, deficit.
Or limiting factor for me. But now looking back and obviously getting more matured and have more experience, I actually now see it as almost a benefit that I kind of learned first to analyze and communicate and understand the athlete. And then because I have always had the interest in the scientific side of it, I have kind of built that to my coaching. But for instance, when I was working with all the junior athletes, they didn't care about lactate. They didn't care about power or anything. They just wanted to go out and go really hard all the time. And I really learned over those 6 or 7 years when I was working with junior athletes and talent development that I think at one time I could just, when they went into the pool at afternoon coming from school, like just based upon how they walked into the pool, I could see if this was a day where I could push them or where I should be there for them, or if I should definitely not talk to them as well. And that kind of part of coaching is something that I haven't really thought about up until now, that like everyone, I think, can go out now, and especially with, you know, also AI systems, like they can create a program and you can also copy paste the program that Norwegians are doing because they are really public about it. But there is just an individualization and communication part of coaching that I think we can never really take out of it. And I think actually you in your biography and Instagram actually describes it really well with a quote. I can't remember it correctly, but maybe you can remember it. It's really great.
I think it's training is science and coaching is art.
Exactly.
Okay, but I think you can learn the coaching side as well. So it's not just an art. It's like, but I think it's maybe as important, or maybe the even more important side, that you feel comfortable, that you have good relationships, you have relationships on eye level, you educate human beings, you want to work with them in the best possible way and best sustainable way, because you, the longer you sustain, the more likely it becomes that people are getting better. You're shaping a process together with the athletes. And as you said, what I really like is you said you got educated by your students and your athletes. And this is something I feel very similar, that every athlete I'm allowed to work with teaches me a lot. So I don't tell this everyone, but in every new iteration of training, in every communication, in every relationship, I can learn a lot as a coach and strive to get a better coach.
No, I think it's a really valuable and sometimes underestimated thing about coaching. And I guess also I am in some ways still very young. I'm turning 30 next year, so still on the younger side of coaching. And I think obviously now looking back just 3, 4, 5 years ago, like I would have done some completely different things with the persons that I've, or athletes that I've been fortunate to work with. But yeah, I guess that's also the beautiful part about not only coaching, but also life, is that you can always learn if you hunger for it.
100%. And I believe even if you wouldn't have changed things, then there is no development. But I would be keen to know more about it. Like, you, is it something from the past that you work with the young guns and you're now working only with professionals, or how do you balance this, or what is your work today? How's the development going on?
Yeah, so my work today is mostly based upon like professional athletes, especially since 2 years ago, I moved to the opposite side of Denmark, actually. So I used to live in Copenhagen, where a lot of the professional Danish athletes live in the Copenhagen squad with Yeah, Magnus, obviously, but there is also Sif Madsen, Thor Madsen, Laura Madsen is also training in that squad sometimes. But she's actually also living in the opposite side of Denmark. But obviously, due to her relation, she will be in the Copenhagen squad at times. But I moved to, it's a city called Aarhus, which is 4 hours away from Copenhagen, but it's also where Christian Høgenhaug trains, for instance. So he lives up in this city. But since I moved to Aarhus, I also decided to leave my kind of junior coaching program back in Denmark, because obviously it's really difficult to coach remotely with junior athletes that I would say you have to see them basically every day and at least be in communication. So I thought also I had worked with junior athletes for 8 or 9 years. So I felt like I have had at that time before I moved to Aarhus, I had maybe 1 or 2 translation years where I was kind of working with both juniors, but also professionals. And I actually found it quite difficult with, I obviously really wanted to be there for the juniors, but I also wanted to be there for the professionals. But for the professionals, that also meant that I had to travel for camps, travel for racing. So I was kind of not doing either 100%. And I felt that was kind of something I could also feel in my coaching, but also feel in my personal life, that there was way too much work and kind of dialogue with too many people. So I decided to leave the juniors and focus 100% on professional athletes. I do still coach 3 junior athletes, but that was mostly because they were on the edge of where they were translating into middle distance racing and professional racing. So for like, when I've been working with them for ever since they were like 13, 14 years old, I didn't really want them to be like pushback of that. So luckily and fortunately enough, they still want to work with me and I like working with them and really curious to see how they can do on the professional scene. But yeah, to summarize, I do mostly work with professional athletes now.
Yes. And So let's jump into maybe the most famous athlete you're working with is Magnus. And you're part of the coaching team. That's the right description? So
yeah, it's really important for me to emphasize that I'm not the, you know, say, coach or head coach for Magnus. That is Jens Petersen Bach, and he's been coach for Magnus now for 7 or 8 years and really been the one that has taken him from age group level up to world class level as he is now. I guess my role in the team, and it's something that everyone is always asking about, because I'm always there, but I'm also not, you know, the one that is making the programs for Magnus. So I guess the best way to describe it is maybe that I'm an assistant coach, but more than that, I'm also just a very, and Magnus is my best friend. But obviously when we are out on camps or at races preparing, we are really professional in our relation as well. And I think one of my strengths and one of the reasons why Magnus want me to the camps and to the races is that I, maybe outside of his mom and dad, obviously I know him maybe better than anyone else. So mostly when we are in races or at camps, like, we don't, it might sound weird, but we don't communicate that much actually, but we just know what to do. Like when we say that we leave for practice at 7, we know that 6:45, everything is packed. Like I have made sure that the car is packed with, you know, everything we need for the training, the lactate meter, the nutrition, the hydration, etc. So everything is just kind of smoothness when we are working together, and I think I'm really good at analyzing and understand how Magnus operates as a person. So obviously I'm helping out with the things I can on the coaching side when Jens is not able to be there. The good thing about having Jens as the head coach and me in the team as well is that Jens and I are working really closely together also on a daily basis. Some of my junior athletes is now also training in the Copenhagen squad, and I'm obviously not seeing them every day. So Jens is really good at taking part in their development as well. And so, you know, we are kind of helping each other when we are out at races or at training camps when the other one is not there and we have the same philosophy. So we are really, like, we have a lot of trust in each other that if I take a decision for, you know, say for Magnus's training, when I'm there, like he doesn't ask questions, and also the other side around, if Jens is making changes with some of my athletes, like I don't ask questions because we have a lot of trust to each other.
Yeah, and I think everyone can see it from the outside. The team of Magnus is like a very close circle. Yeah, and you came to the triathlon circuit together, and you're very well connected for me as a coach from the outside. And obviously you made some results, like the Ross record, for example, or other races where Magnus simply dominated the whole world circuit on the bike. And this was super interesting. And then he made a development, for example, you can't dominate on the bike, but he was even capable to really run very well off the bike. And so this was something people noticed from the outside. And on the other hand, there's not much information, I believe, about Magnus and his team in the world, because you're not that vocal. And I think it's very interesting that you team up in the background. And I would like to hear a little bit more about the your idea of training, how you optimize things, because obviously from the outside, everything is number driven you're doing. Magnus is following a pretty strict program, how to develop his performances. And I think maybe you can take us a little bit into this, how you work, what maybe your principles are. I think you have to be very into aerodynamics, because you can see that how Magnus' cockpit developed from a duct tape cockpit into a full carbon fiber cockpit, working together with the fastest brands on the market. And you can always see, or let's say there are athletes outside where I see if they change things, you can assume that they have measured it, and others are just copying it. And definitely Magnus and his team are people who definitely measure things before they gonna try it. And maybe you can take us a little bit along about this process.
Yeah, 100%. And I think to maybe most of the listeners' surprise, maybe like, or maybe not, but the training itself, I think, is not something magical or really like special compared to, I think, what everybody else is doing. And I think that's also the beautiful thing about our sport now, is that it is on such a professional level that I think for the majority of the top 10 in the world, like, they are mostly doing the same stuff. Obviously there is people that can handle more volume or handle more time in the run shoes, etc. But I think what really makes the biggest difference now is how you operate, obviously with the program you have, but also how you operate outside of training and how you kind of take advantage of the expertise you have around you. So what we have really, and this is to the biggest, like, kudos to Magnus for, like, he's really, really good at finding the right people around him. Like, the best like example I can come up with was, I think this was after Dubai, the T100 Dubai final in 2024, it must have been. Magnus had not the best swim. I think he came out of the water 1.5 minutes behind, but it was just like he couldn't follow the front pack. And Magnus is obviously really like driven by perfectionism, and he just wanted now to be a swimmer. So after the Dubai race, he was just like talking for 72 hours until we had to go home, like, can we please find a coach that can see me Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at like 2 hours a day, work with the technical aspects. And I was like, that is like really difficult, because also hiring a man that has to be, or woman that can be available in your, you know, like the outside hours of an everyday life and only be there for Magnus. That is one thing, is that will be really expensive, but it's also difficult, and also difficult to find the expertise. And he was just like talking the whole way, like, when we woke up, it was like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It was like, keep talking about it. And then for some reason, he found maybe the best swim coach we have in Denmark, who has been working with like Olympic gold medalist from Denmark, several Olympic participants as well, and been head coach for the Danish national swim team. And he got in touch with him, and he has been working with Magnus ever since and really developed his swim. Obviously, it's not always that it translates directly into racing, but we can now see the right steps is moving in the right direction. So that was a good example of, like, if he sees a kind of a capacity that can be developed to the highest level, like, he will figure out a way to have the right people around him.
But I believe this is a key high performance athlete needs to have. Like, it's kind, let's say it's a mindset, it's kind of passionate about the performance, or like a driver that gives them the persistence to go the way, the longest it is needed to find the right people in the team around. And would you describe this as a pattern you have in your team?
Yeah, I mean, but I think Magnus is still like the biggest driver of it. Obviously, Jens plays a huge part in this as well. And I think also what Jens is really good at, and what he has really, like, as you have for me as well, like, you and Jens has really acted as a mentor for me in the way that I have also developed as a coach. So, yeah, as you know, I have also used your expertise a lot when I've been in doubt of things, and the same way with Jens. And I think what I have learned from Jens, and what Jens is really good at, is that he knows that he doesn't know everything. So he's also not blind for taking in expertise on areas where he knows that, oh, I'm not the expert here, but I wanted to know more and get people in. But what he is then really good at is to then, I don't know if this is the right translation, but kind of keeping a red line, or like keep everything, that everyone is working in the same direction. Because obviously it doesn't make sense if you can have the greatest 8 people around you that is an expert in all the areas, but if they aren't working together as a team, then it doesn't really make sense. So Jens is really good at saying, okay, if person A, B, or C, they want to go to the right and the other want to go to the left, then we figure out a way to, okay, everyone meets at the middle, you know, so it doesn't compromise everything. So I think that is a really, like, strong thing of the team, is that we are really good at working together and everyone respects each other. And then obviously Magnus has his core people, which is Jens and me and his sports scientist as well. And we are kind of, you know, say the ones that is maybe mostly into the decision making, but then everyone else around, they're just really invested in it. And I think if we called like everyone from the team 2 a.m. in the middle of the night, like, they would just be there. I think that's the mindset of everyone. Like, we all want to throw everything we have in our hands to make sure that Magnus can perform and is in a great place.
Yeah, I believe that's the modern way of getting to the highest performance in our sport. And it's a team up, and it's a huge team behind. And as you describe it, with a core team, I think this is very similar to the way I work with Laura, for example. And I try to include experts where needed, in the medical side, on the aerodynamic side, on the athletic side, on the treatment side, and etc. This is really, really challenging to set up a team and steer the right direction. And hats off to what you're doing there. And let's move over a little bit to your athletes. You're building up high performance athletes, and you're building kind of a squad. I've seen you've been in South Africa with your athletes for a few weeks now. What are your goals for this season, or for their development?
Yeah, so as you said, like, obviously the main character that I'm working with is obviously Magnus, as people, a lot of people know. But I'm also, like, and this is said in the most respectful way to Magnus, is that I'm also really like I'm proud to say that I'm also more than that. I'm not only the one that is like I can more than just shout at Magnus, but I also can perform myself as a coach.
I would like to jump into this. Just it's not about the shouting. It is to see all the tiny little bits to protect an athlete like you do. And I can say from my perspective, you are taking an example how to do it around races. And this is maybe really unseen for most people because you see Magnus racing, but you can't see what's happening around. And it's really like I think I can judge it from 10 years in triathlon, what you both did in the sport. And it is an example. It is, it's a pinnacle and I really like it. And I believe that even this winter is a very challenging winter for you because you didn't have the best season last year. You ended up with a very good 70.3 worlds, even maybe not the result where you want to end up, but with a very strong performance. Yeah, and a very strong field. And I believe these winter times are winter times where, you turn over every stone and look for new potentials and so on.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's also coming over to some of the professional athletes that I'm working with now. And I get a lot of like inquiries, but also like questions from athletes that want to work with me, and they say, do you think I can be like Magnus in a year? And I'm like, first of all, that's the wrong mindset. I understand that obviously you want to be at the level that Magnus is on, but you should definitely not strive to be Magnus. Like, you should strive to be yourself and also like work and figure out, okay, where is your maximum capacity? And that is something, to be honest, like it's actually something that has been a bit difficult in my coaching, is that like for many people out there, I am also the face of Magnus in a way. And everyone thinks that we have a certain formula that like if you just duplicate this for 6 months, then you'll become a world champion. And I have had examples of professional athletes that has been with me for only 6 or 8 months. And if they have one bad race and they see, oh, man, I still have a lot of work to do to get to Magnus's level, they're like, I'm going self-coaching, or like I go out and figure out a new solution. And that is something that I think now when I have athletes that is reaching out to me, it's something that I am really vocal and honest about, that I'm also now I'm in a very fortunate situation where it's not because I have to take in athletes. Like I can take in athletes if I believe there is a potential and there is a relationship that I trust and that I want to work closely with, where in the beginning, maybe I was obviously coming up through the ranks as a coach. I wanted, you need to build up something first, but now like that has also given me some scars along the way. And it has, at times it has been really difficult. And I've also felt that, not sure that the coaching is for me. It's a hard business because you can put all your effort and emotions. And I think in many ways, the thing with my coaching that is both a benefit, but also maybe a negative thing with my coaching is that I get really emotional invested in my coaching. Like I'm really like, if my athletes are not feeling good or they're not performing, or like I'm really analyzing and figuring out what can we do differently. I really care about the people that I'm working with, and I know you are the same. So like that takes off a lot of space and energy.
Absolutely, because at some point you get kind of a symbiosis, and even if someone is in pain and you can really feel that your body is struggling as well maybe from it, and but I think this kind of empathy is needed if you want to be close with people. And in the other hand, is you are shaping a relationship, and you have the professional side of it, and it's sometimes really close to friendship, and sometimes it's you can't give it a clear definition. Sometimes friendship is involved because you spend a lot of time together, and I can really feel where you are in it. And the other part is I really believe in professionalism in this, even on the coaching side, that you have like a step back and you really know the targets. But I can 100% relate to what you're saying, that you're emotional involved, or you're like the whole Casper is in the game when he's taking a job for an athlete. And the other side is you need kind of, let's say, diamonds, like let take Magnus as a diamond in this case, because you can't influence someone to a certain mindset. And the part is, if people try to copy something, like they really have to grow their own, like to their, they have to grow to their potential, or if they want, yeah. But they find it in themselves and surround themselves with the best people possible, and then something bigger is growing all of a sudden. And this needs a lot of time to grow. And I believe we didn't talk about it, but I guess there's a lot of unseen time in the career of Magnus before he kicked asses of the big boys in 2020.
Yeah, a funny side note to that one is actually, obviously we have covered Magnus a bit, but maybe to finalize it is, before his really dominant performance at 70.3 Poland, where people thought he was coming out of nowhere, he had had his pro license for 2 years, but he had one big crash like the week before he was supposed to race his first professional race. Then the second time when he, like that was almost like a career-ending crash he had on his bike. And he like was really close. Like the doctor said he would never be able to swim again or like lift his shoulder up. He came back from that, and then eventually he was really close to doing his first professional race again, but then crashed on a training camp uphill, actually, because it was slippery. So there was actually, you can say, a 2 years time where he was actually a professional and close to race, but then he was just really unlucky with a car crash and also a crash on his bike. And then obviously COVID hit, and again, he couldn't race. So, you know, he just had maybe close to 30 months of just like time where he didn't race. Obviously, he had to recover from an injury two times, but he was just putting in a lot of work. Like we are talking over 30 hours of week training per week for 30 months. And that was what showcased in 70.3 Poland.
And this is something like you can't highlight for enough. Yeah. So there was no result for him or anything. Like it was just plain work in the quiet. And this is something which is still, the has the highest value in endurance sport, that people have to work unseen. They work on themselves. They are like eremits on the mountain, and not having a amazing social life. So because they are focusing on recovery. On the other hand, but this is something you have behind many, many world-class performances, or hinter all world-class performances and people coming up. Now let's get finally to your athletes. Who is racing with you in 2026?
Yeah, so I have a few athletes now on board. I think I have close to 10 professionals, but it's actually divided over a few runners and then also some professional triathletes. So I think maybe the most known of the professionals I'm working with is Colin Such. For instance, he just did the American record on the Ironman. We started working together last year, and finally we made him being able to succeed at the Ironman distance. So he's a young guy coming up, obviously still a lot of work to be done. Then I'm working also with Sarah Jane Goodwin, who is, some people might know Josh Goodwin. He was he finished second at the PTO championship, where the race we first met, and also a European champion on the 70.3 distance. I did used to work with George as well, but he decided to end his career. But to my luck, I'm still working with George, in the fact that I'm coaching his wife. And Sarah Jane has been actually training partner for Vicky Holland for 6 years on the Olympic circuit, and is now translating into middle distance racing. And I think she will really be somebody that people should look after. And I'm really excited to see how she will do it.
Another strong lady team. From Great Britain.
Yeah, another strong lady from Great Britain that can swim, bike, and run.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting project for me to kind of take her from short distance into middle distance. And yeah, with George's knowledge as well with aerodynamic and obviously his background in the sport, it's really helpful to have him on board as well. Then also Jason Pohl, another American athlete. I'm working with Fiona Moratti, also UK. Sorry, not UK. I will get heard from that. She's an American athlete as well. Rachel Olsen, another American. And then I have a few still Danish semi-professional athletes and one from Chile who's called Martin Ulloa as well in my squad. I think I've covered some good names, and I mean I'm really happy with the athletes I have now. I feel like I'm working with athletes that to me is not necessarily the most important if they have they need to have some kind of potential, but it's also more if they're willing to do the work, because I believe that you can have all the talent you want in the world, but if you don't want to do the work, then it's game over. And for instance, and this is not to take this over to Clément Myong. I worked with Clément for 1.5 years when, for instance, he won his first Ironman on home soil in Nice. He also won the ITU Long Distance World Championship and finished top 10 at the Ironman World Championship in Nice. Where he was actually, that was maybe a bit too aggressive on the bike, but he went with Sam Laidlaw on home soil in Nice. That was maybe too of an aggressive tactic. But I really like Clément, but he was also really honest with me after the World Championship in Nice. And he told me that this training for me, at least, it's too much. I need some more flexibility. I need some more, you can say... And this is all, obviously, this is a philosophy in a way, or he wanted more fun. He wanted to have adventure in his training. And looking back now, and this is also one of the things that I've learned in my coaching, obviously I at that time needed to maybe adapt my training to something that could be more translatable for Clément. But obviously there is also just... still a certain recipe in professional racing where you cannot just train 15 hours a week and be the best in the world. You need to do the work, and Clément could see that the training worked. He was performing really well. He won his first Ironman. He was fighting. He was up at the front of a race in a world championship. Doing that alone is really difficult, but that was just too much for him. He needed a different way, which is totally I respect that. And looking back, maybe I wanted to have a different approach with him, because he's obviously a different character and has a lot of potential. I was to say that it takes a certain person to do this training that it requires now, ever since COVID, and you know that. Yeah.
And even the sport has leveled up even more since the races appeared when we are talking about. So the sport is accelerating even more. So this, let's say, quiet work, disciplined work is even more required because there's just a very small space for mistakes during racing and during training and recovery. So you see more and more complete athletes. And I think we have a development at the moment with the upcoming 20 meter rule. That there is no room for weakness. So even a small weakness on the bike will be a problem with a 20 meter rule. Yeah. So even if you swim great and have a very punchy run, now you have to cover this 90 or 180K on the bike. And I guess if you're not in the best bike shape possible, or you can respond to high intensity attacks or whatever, it will be really, really, really difficult for athletes. Yeah. And I believe this profile, so I'm fully on your side that it requires the perfection, or that just to strive for it.
Yeah, and it is a difficult task for the athlete to do what is required nowadays. And I think you see examples as, yeah, let's say Christian Blumenfeld, who, like, he is really somebody that can grind through training up in altitude by himself for several weeks. And it's not everyone that can do that. And I must also have, like, I have learned along the way that the way that I'm working with Magnus is not the same way as I'm working with Colin, for instance, or the way I'm working with Colin is not the same way as I'm working with Fiona or when I was working with Ruth Essel, you know. So, like, there is different ways also to be successful. And I think actually if you take on the male side, for instance, Sam Laidlaw and Magnus, they are polar opposites in the way that they obviously is vocal about themselves. But also, like, Sam is really vocal about that he needs breaks within his training. Like, he needs periods where he's totally off, and even when he is in a very specific phase, he still needs to have some fun along the way, or like take a break. Where Magnus is the total opposite. Like, he would lose energy by having to, you know, have fun. Maybe that's also wrong way to put it, but, you know, like, it's to figure out also as a coach, where do my athletes get energy from? Because if they get energy sometime from maybe having an afternoon off to see some friends or something, obviously it's not something you can do every afternoon, but if it's now and then and it will fill them up with energy, then, like, that's a part of the puzzle and they can still be successful. And I think that's maybe one of the most valuable things that I have learned along the way, and something that I wished I had knew when I was working with Clément, for instance. Because I think if I knew that by then, we could still have a coach-athlete relationship and had built upon what we had started. So that, looking back, is I would say a mistake on my end. And that's the beauty of it. You learn along the way, and luckily I'm sitting here and feel like I know more, but there is a lot I still don't know.
I think this is something everyone can say, like, there's more you don't know, but to really have this clear eye on where's the individual development, I think this makes a very good coach, and you are one of these coaches out there, like, I think people looking at it, and so we are very happy to have you here on the podcast to look at it. And from my perspective, if I would sum it up in the case, we always say we prioritize health, and if you take health as a physical health, psychological health, and social health, then it's a part, and maybe you can push away the social part for a few weeks. And I think this is what people are doing. If they go to Sierra Nevada or certain other places in high altitude, yeah, you are on your own and you spend a lot of hours on your own. And the other part is maybe this is, you described it by Christian Blumenfeld, and he obviously spent more time than many, many other athletes in high altitude on his own. So maybe his need is not as big as the need of other people for social life in it, but I don't know it. It's just a perception from the outside of what he is doing. But he's the pinnacle of the sport at the moment. Yeah, he is the strongest athlete of the last years on several distances, and so it is interesting to have a look at it and not copying it, but to recognize what he has done to get to this level he has.
Agree. And I think what is, and this is something we are also talking a lot about, the two of us as well, Philip, is, you know, like, I think everyone is looking at the secret or the special recipe for success at the moment. And I think by the end of the day, it's like, it's not a certain program or a certain session, let's say 6 times 10 minutes, that makes the difference. But what really makes the difference now in high performance sport is, like, with all the professionals I have, obviously we make a framework for a training block that can maybe last, let's say, 5 weeks. And then within those 5 weeks, obviously every week looks like and there is a development. But I would say, obviously, there is periods where everything is just into a flow and training peaks will just be green all the way. But also for some of them, we have conversations daily with just doing small adjustments based upon HRV, resting heart rate, how obviously their internal feeling is. That is like the metrics can say everything in the world, but if the athlete is feeling bad or feeling good, like that will always be the key driver for me. And but like the small changes, I think, is also what makes the most important, because that will create consistency. And you know, sometimes these small adjustments, let's say an athlete will change from doing 6 times 10 minutes to just 5 times 10 minutes or 4 times 10 minutes, because one has maybe slept an hour less than they usually do because of something, let's say that. So to make sure that we are not overextending the total strain of the day, and making sure that we can align that with how much recovery the athlete has had, like that small adjustment can maybe do that instead of that they will then feel tired after maybe doing the prescribed session for 2 days and we have to like take fully rest, then that small adjustment can do that then the day after we can continue as prescribed. And I think that is one thing or a tool that is very underestimated in the coaching, not only from the coach's aspect, but I think also from the athlete's perspective. I mean, you can maybe like nod to this as well, that obviously with some of your athletes, like you don't see them every day. So obviously with Laura, because she's your wife and you live with her, you can see her on a daily basis. But with the athletes that we don't necessarily see every day, then there is also a certain like degree of education from our side to educate the athlete on taking individual decisions in training as well, because like that also translate into racing. Because yeah, we can be there on race day giving splits and saying stuff, but maybe along a 8 or 9 hour race, we can only talk to them 5 or 6 times for what is maybe 2 or 3 seconds. So that is like almost 0% of the race time. So 99.9% of the race time, they have to take decisions themselves. And I believe the biggest task for us as a coach is then to educate our athletes to be independent in that. Like I almost want to feel like that my athlete, and this should be understood in the right mean, that like they should almost feel that I am like that they don't need me. Like I need to have been educating them that much that they know how the structure is. They know the decisions that they need to take, because if I have made them or prepared them to be able to take those decisions, then I feel like I have done my job to the best of my ability, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and in the end, this is kind of a philosophy. If you want to have a strong athlete, you have to aim for the goal that they are on their own, that they have the freedom and they can walk alone. Yeah, so I think we have a very similar picture of a high performance athlete. So and we want to have independent individuals, and they come for a certain topic to you and to work together with you on personal development, sports development, and in the end, the high performance is as a result of this process. I want to focus another topic, maybe the last topic for today. I know you are one of the, like, you're really into the sport, and we have an actual development that we had, like the 20 meter rule is coming up. For all races of this year, we had the first race with Ironman New Zealand. And what is your take on it? And from your personal perspective, what is going to change? What have you seen at the Ironman New Zealand? What are you curious about it? And what will be different? Like, I think we have seen a few races with the T100, but in the end, the most interesting races haven't been with the 20 meter rule. So I would be keen to have your take on this.
Yeah, there is obviously a big curiosity to how much the 20 meter draft rule will impact the racing we have today. I think the as you said, like it has the 20 meter draft rule has been there in T100, but I think it's not something that will be showcased in either T100 or 70.3 racing, because the distance covered is just not. Obviously, there is still something to say with the 20 meter draft rule on T100 and 70.3 racing, but on an Ironman, when you go into that those last 30 or 40k of the bike, and also going into the run afterwards, is obviously plays a huge factor. And I think this past weekend's race with Ironman New Zealand, where we saw Trevor Foley do a magnificent performance and taking the win. Obviously, Kat won on the women's side, but we've seen that before, and she's obviously very strong across all three disciplines. Where Trevor normally comes out with a deficit from the swim, and what he has struggled a lot with is then that he has had to do so much an overpower expenditure for the first bit of the race to just make sure that he is
part of the race.
Part of the race, like where now. To be honest, and I haven't talked with Trevor about this, so I can't say it with 100% certainty, but I would imagine that Trevor maybe even biked a little bit more passively compared to what he's done in the past. And we also saw that he, even though now with the 20-meter draft rule, where, like, quote-unquote, you need to be able to bike better, that will harm your run in a way. But he ran one of his best marathon run splits, if not the best, considering that now people had to race more themselves in the bike. But I think actually this comes down to maybe he was riding way more passively on the bike because he knew that everyone has to work themselves as well. So I don't have to chase the front pack to gain benefit of being there and motorbikes, etc. I think actually that was also one of the great things about the coverage was that at least I didn't saw a motorbike in front of the athlete very often. They were often behind, which made it a really individual race. And I know there is opinions about whether this is a good thing or bad thing, and there is the tactical aspect of it as well. But I was really happy to see that people now has to be strong across all three disciplines.
Yeah, and I'm keen to see the results of it, and I'm keen to see the differences. And Ironman New Zealand is definitely an example that you have sometimes you had like a hermetic swim group in the front and they are going over the bike leg, or maybe they, like Trevor, might have lacked the energy to attack after his chase. Yeah. And so I'm very positive about it, and I'm keen to see more races. And as you said, it is a new game on the long distance. And and even if it comes to more challenging courses like Challenge Roth, for example, is not just a flat course or some technical aspect. And I believe this comes down to the root of the triathlon, what was intended, that is more or less an individual time trial. Definitely 20 meters, not completely individual, but it comes close to the basic idea of it. And I believe that's a very positive development, and I'm looking forward to an interesting season of racing in 2026.
Yeah, and I think also it's at least from my end, and I think it's the same for you, I have at least changed a few things in my training for my athletes. I work with both athletes that is front pack swimmers. I also work with athletes that comes from a non-swim background and has to work their way up through the field. And with those athletes, like maybe going from having a very big swim focus, then now we are maybe working more towards obviously making sure that they are metabolic efficient on the swim for the level they have. So we know that they can come out of the water and be able to execute the bike and run level that they have, because now obviously still want them to come out with a small deficit so they don't have to chase the whole day, but it doesn't stress us at much, and we can maybe, instead of catalyzing their limitation in training, we can actually now capitalize their expertise or like their strong parts of triathlon, which for some of them is the bike and run, like we can use them more than we could before, which I think is super interesting. But also the other way around, with the athletes I have that is run pack swimmers, that maybe they haven't had the strongest bike but have used the tactical elements of the 12 meter draft rule, where obviously you still had to pedal the bike around the 90 or 180k, but you could do it with less power compared to what they have to do now. So that has also changed the way that we have scheduled the training. Like for some of them, we have maybe, even though it can sound silly for some, maybe with some of the athletes I have that is front pack swimmers, like we have actually used more time now on the swim to really make sure that they can like use that to their full ability and maybe put pressure on the swim and then come out of the bike and again also put pressure on. So, you know, I think it's created a very interesting way of racing, and seeing the New Zealand race definitely just got me even more hyped for the season to come.
Yeah, I believe that that's a super interesting insight for our auditory, because I'm keen to see what coaches have done in the winter. No one knows. Yeah, you give it a first little insight what you're thinking about. Definitely, I did my conclusions on it as well, and structured training maybe a little bit different, maybe similar to what I did the years before. But how it's going to impact the work. And we haven't talked about, for example, arrow positions. Yeah, so sometimes an arrow position which is maybe completely prioritized on aerodynamics, where you can pedal with low power pretty fast, but maybe you do a different arrow position where you have a higher power output because you know that the bike counts even more, and maybe you have a better split, but you know what you invest is going to pay off. Let's see where we're going to end up. I think this is worth another podcast, maybe in summertime, when we have seen more races, Texas and so on, around the corner. And Kasper, I think it's a good part to wrap it up. Our podcast. And I think I have a lot of more questions to you. Maybe we can do a second edition of this. Thank you very much for a very open insight into your system and into your development as a very young coach on elite levels. It's great to have you in the group of coaches. And thank you for taking time for my first English version of Kickass Radio. And big thanks to Denmark.
You know, it's me saying thank you, Philip, for having me on. And I also want publicly to say a big thank you to you. I think young athletes as me, we need coaches like you with the experience and also the transparency. What maybe the audience doesn't know is that we obviously have conversation and had that ever since we met each other in Daytona, but over the recent years we've had more deep conversations. And sometimes, to be honest, I have asked myself the question of if I put something to the table, because I feel like you always come up with some really great knowledge to me. So I just wanted publicly to say a big thank you for your transparency and the way that you have acted as also a mentor for me. I highly appreciate it. And that is what we need in the sport. If we also want, one thing is that we want young athletes to come up, but if we also want young coaches to come up and maybe have another perspective on the sport, we need persons like you. So you're a big inspiration for me as a coach, and I appreciate it.
I'm getting red. The part is it's the same way with your athletes. At some point you need people to challenge your ideas, to see if people think similar or different. And this is something I found with you, and for me it's great to take this to our podcast for the first time. And let's see where we are heading to. And thank you for listening. Thank you for joining.